another wonderful weekly podcast of Nose Country Wrestling Podcast. This is episode number 7 with the one, the only, infamous, the perfect 10 baby doll, Nicola Roberts. We'll be calling in approximately 18, about 8:15, quarter after the hour. But in the meanwhile, I got my co-host back. Amen. You're back with me. The one, the only, Big Country.
Yeah, hopefully you didn't give any fans any heart attacks while I was gone.
No, I didn't, but it was we had a wonderful episode last week, brother. I hate that you missed it, but I'm glad you're back. Things happen in this wonderful world of wrestling, and you got to handle your business, so it's all good. So I just want to let everyone know, next week's guest is WWE's The Boogeyman, the living nightmare himself, the one that eats the worms and spits them on the other wrestlers. It's going to be a wonderful episode. I don't know exactly how he's going to talk. He talks in nursery rhymes, you know, but it ought to be very interesting. Then the following week, this is an exclusive, Big Country, and I'm really hyped up on this one. Calling in all the way from the Philippines, I got ECW original Chili Willy calling in, and he's going to tell his life story. And I am the second person in history to ever interview Chili Willy. He did one other interview over in the Philippines. Didn't quite go the way he liked it. He promised himself he'll never do another interview, but after I twisted his arm, and I'll tell you, and he's a good friend of mine, I've known him for many years, he said, "Nugs, I'll do your show, just don't take no cheap shots." I said, "No, brother, we'll put you out in a great light, we'll make you look like $1 million." So that's what's going on to catch up while you've been gone, Country, so thanks. The balls continue to roll, and the big wheels keep on turning here at Nugs Country Wrestling Podcast. So tell me, Big Country, got anything going on this weekend, brother?
Well, I'll be going to Hickory, North Carolina for Milestone Wrestling, where I will be challenging the current Smash Mouth heavyweight champion, Trey Chaos, for his Smash Mouth title. I don't see that being much of a challenge. I pretty much probably just beat the shit out of the guy and take his belt and then beat the shit out of him with his own belt and, you know, call it a night, get my pay, and go home.
That's phenomenal. That's phenomenal. Well, I'll be in Orangeburg for CWA, you know, Champions with Attitude, Roger Gleaton's big company down there. That'll be on February the 6th at the Orangeburg National Guard Armory, 7:30 p.m. tickets. You can order them online at 803-533-1111 or 803-707-4072. Bell time is at 7:30. Doors open at 6 p.m. Kids under 3 free. Floor seats are $10. Ringside advance tickets are $15. Ringside the door are $18. They're at 1645 Stonewall Jackson Boulevard in Orangeburg, South Carolina. They have two women's wrestling matches scheduled for this weekend. And I've never seen two women's matches at an indie show before. They got Samantha Starr. Now, I don't know if you know who she is, Big Country. That's Baby Doll's daughter. And that's also Ricky the Dragon Steamboat's niece. So that's going to be phenomenal. She's going to be wrestling Savannah Evans. And then there's another wrestler by the name of Onyx Danielle. I might be saying her name wrong. Versus Kimberly Spades. Now, I don't know, Kimberly, you know, I know you've worked with her. She works as a manager. She's also a wrestler. So she's going to be in the building. That's going to be a great night. Plus, they got CWA's regular lineup of all the wrestlers. The Insane Lumberjack Timber will be there. Ain't too happy to see him. You know, as well as the Salem Center Six, the CWA heavyweight champion, as all the other great wrestlers will be there. Stephen Hunter, but the other half of the Twin Towers, that is Nugs Family Management's cream of the crop client list will be there. Other great wrestlers will be there as well. It looks like who else they look like they got on the card? They have Tracer X on the card. They're going to have Joxer, and looks like what's the Wyndham kid?
Jesse Windham.
Jesse Windham's going to be there. Asylum looks like he's going to be there. More and more, the regular lineup of CWA wrestlers is going to be there. Michael Judas, I've heard, was going to be there. So that's going to be a great card coming up. So nice. I'm really looking forward to that. And then I promised Baby Doll that I would tell everyone about this. She's got a big event coming up in Spartanburg, South Carolina on February the 27th for Big Time Wrestling. And that's going to be huge. I'm like, looking at this card, Big Country, it's like you're going back in time to an NWA Mid-Atlantic card. They got the coming in, they got a triple main event. They got a steel cage match. Number one is Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson, the Rock and Roll Express, versus the Barbarian, the Warlord, the Powers of Pain, with Jim Cornette as their manager. Special gatekeeper for the cage match will be Road Warrior Animal. So that by itself is worth a ticket by itself. Then TNA World Title return match, TNA Omega World Champion Matt Hardy versus former TNA Champion Ethan Carter. EC3 is going to be there. Big Time Wrestling Heavyweight Champion Flex Armstrong versus Big Papa Pump Scott Steiner. The total package, Lex Luger is going to be doing an in-ring appearance, as well as the Battle of the Sexes, 30 years of the making. Jim Cornette versus the Perfect 10 Baby Doll. Plus, Badass Billy Gunn, the Hurricane, Shane Helms, and much, much more. Meet and greet is at 5:30 to 7:30. Bell time is 7:30 p.m. So that's a great card coming up. So Carolina's got some great events going on, and I'm telling you, it ought to be phenomenal. So I told him I'd push those two big cards coming up, and I did that. So that's out of the way. So I can take a break. Go ahead, Country. Talk to you, brother.
Man, that is I'll tell you what, I've actually thought about taking that with Saturday off and going to that show in Spartanburg. You know, it's right down the road for me. Because, I mean,
brother, if you have if you can get the night off, we can share on some gasoline, because honestly, I'd love to see that wrestling card. And
I'm telling you,
phenomenal.
I mean, where else can you see the Powers of Pain, you know, the Rock and Roll Express, Lex Luger, Big Papa Pump, you know, the second greatest manager ever, Jim Cornette, you know, of course, Joey knows his first.
Right.
But, you know.
Thanks, brother.
I mean, even if you're not a wrestling fan, this is geez.
Road Warrior Animal's going to be there. Freaking Lex Luger, Big Papa
Matt
Pump.
Hardy, you know.
Matt Hardy, the Hurricane Shane Helms. That card's stacked. I mean, this is our
childhood here. This is, you know, what we grew up on. This isn't the crap that you watch now. This is legends. This is when wrestling was wrestling, when it was, you know, you could tell it wasn't just full of acrobats and, you know, and overstellar athletes. This is when wrestling was wrestling.
Because that is what you call a stacked card, Big Country. That card is stacked with nothing but names. I mean, and I'm sure the regular talent, you know, the Carolinas talent, you know, the local indie talent will probably be phenomenal in that card. Because some of those guys are going to have someone to wrestle, you know?
Outside
of themselves. That's going to be great. That big time wrestling, I'll tell you, they're doing things. And they got cards all the way booked from Connecticut to Raleigh to everywhere in between that they're doing shows at that company.
Yeah, I believe next month Ric Flair is actually going to be wrestling in-ring against Ricky Morton,
wow.
I believe. So
that's phenomenal.
You know, that's,
I'm telling you, that's big stuff.
That's going to be a sellout right there, I'm telling you.
Oh, yeah. So I'll tell you something, Big Country, something that's pissing me off. I think we ought to call this rant that we do every week Pissed Off and Mad About It, because it fits the theme to our song, to our show from the Texas Hippie Coalition. I am pissed off, sick and tired of pro wrestlers that say they're pro wrestlers, but soon as they take their boots off and walk, they're not even out the back door, they're already turned back into who the hell they think they are to begin with. I'm sorry, if you're going to be a pro wrestler, I think you need to live the. People see you up the street at the stopping for gas. You should first off not be stopping for gas. You should have the common sense to fill your car up before you get there, so you don't have to stop for enough on the way out of town, because that's a bad thing. Wrestlers shouldn't be seen pumping gas. It shouldn't happen. Two, you know what I mean? If you're going to be out of character, if you're going to be not in your gimmick when you're leaving and heading out, at least live your gimmick. If they stop and they see you at a restaurant and someone comes over and you're a heel, don't start being a good guy and start signing autographs. Tell them to get the hell away from you. You don't want to be bothered. Live your gimmick. That's what's wrong these days. People are afraid to live their gimmick. If they did, I mean, how can we tell you that wrestling is real if people don't believe, we don't even try to make it real for anybody? It pisses me off. I just see too many of these wrestlers, you know, they're not business. I mean, what
they're playing,
suits, I
they're
mean,
playing wrestler. That's
they don't
all
even
is.
Have
they're
respect. These are the same wrestlers, big country. I swear to God, it pisses me off. They wrestle and they're not a main event, so they will go to the promoter and say, hey, is there any way I can get my pay and be out of here before intermission? I'm going to tell you something. As somebody else that's in the main event, one of the guys, I'm not saying that I'm one of the old schoolers, but I've been in the business 12 years. It's a smack in the face that you don't have enough respect to watch the rest of the show. You're at the freaking beginning of the card. You should be sitting there like a sponge absorbing everything that the rest of these wrestlers are doing. You should be trying to pick up something new to add to your arsenal of wrestling skills. You should be studying. How do you become better than everyone else? I tell you, you work everyone, you out-wrestle everybody else, but you're a student of the game. You watch everything from psychology to find out, ooh, look at that finishing move that he did. I could take that same finishing move and put this little twist to it, and I could go places with that. But they don't. They're at the door. They're worried about getting in the car and driving down the road and getting drunk with their buddies because they're a pro wrestling, so they can brag to the girls at the freaking local watering hole that they're a pro wrestler like Ric Flair. Sorry. Ric Flair lived his gimmick. That guy lived his gimmick. I've been told stories that the man would walk around in the hotel as Ric Flair. He would wear the robe 24/7. He carried his belt everywhere he went with him. The man was pro wrestling. That's what's wrong with pro wrestling today. These sons of bitches ain't really pro wrestlers. They're part-time wannabe workers. I mean, they half the time their gear stinks so damn bad because they don't take it out of their damn gimmick bags and wash it. They walk around, you can smell their freaking ass from across the room in their gimmick bag. None of their gear has been washed. It pisses me the fuck off. I'm tired of it. I mean, if you're either going to be a wrestler, live the life of a wrestler. Don't just do it so you got something to brag about. Have a love for the wrestling. I mean, the bottom line is if you're not going to build up wrestling, don't hurt pro wrestling. If you're not part of the solution, guess what? You're part of the fucking problem. And the problem is these people aren't living wrestling. And the guy that's really hungry could come up and take that spot that you're not really appreciating. It pisses me off. It makes me angry. That's what it does. It pisses me off and makes me angry. I don't know how you feel about a big country, but I hate people like
well,
that.
You know, it goes back to when we talked about it, I believe it was in like episode one or two. I think it was episode one when we were talking with Timber. It's, you know, it's all about how these guys, you know, who taught them, who trained them, who, you know, did they train them in just how to do the moves or did they train them in the actual respect of the art? And, you know, that's what a lot of guys don't do. They go to these guys, they shell out their money, the guys teach them how to do stuff in the ring, but they don't prepare them for the locker room, for the politics, for, you know, how to handle themselves, how to treat this business with respect. And that those are the guys that do that shit. Those are the guys that, you know, walk around like their shit don't stink, and they sit there and they come in and, you know, like you said, if they're not main event on the card, then they're do their match, they want their money, they want to get the hell out of there. The fact of the matter is all these other guys had to wait around to wrestle, and they watched your sorry ass wrestle, so, you know, it's a respect issue. And, you know, I'll tell you what, when I see guys do shit like that, I'm more than happy to go to the promoter and ask him the next time that guy's in the locker room with me to book him against me. And, you know, I have the ability to beat the respect in the disrespectful people because I can't stand that. I mean, I'm 400 pounds. I may not be the most athletic. Yeah, I may not be the most athletic son of a bitch in the locker room, but I give 150% of myself. I go out there, I bust my ass, and I make sure that those people earned, you know, they got their money's worth. That they made sure that when they left, they said, man, that big country, he knows what he's doing. He knows how to entertain. Not just that, but the boys in the locker room respect me and, you know, enjoy being in that locker room with me. You start getting a reputation of being one of those dickheads that wants to leave early and half-asses everything. And I'll tell you what, you can watch your bookings diminish like it ain't nothing.
Yeah, cause trust me, I'm at a point right now. I mean, we haven't talked about it much on the air, but I'm getting to a point where I bought my own wrestling ring. I got my own PA. in different towns and buildings now looking to run a wrestling event. And those them same sorry son of bitches that's all about themselves, when it comes to the time for them wanting to get a booking, you think I'm going to book any of those sorry sons of bitches? It ain't going to happen. These are the same sorry sons of bitches that won't hang up a flyer. They won't even they won't even search down the wrestling company's Facebook or their Twitter and find a flyer that they can throw up on their wall and try to help push the show that they're going to be in. These are people that never sold a fucking a ticket in their damn life. They couldn't fucking sell a ticket if they were giving them away at the 7-Eleven. I mean, they couldn't sell a ticket or give one away. But these are the first ones that want to be out there with their hand out and expect to get paid. Because I'm going to tell you something. You can be as nice as you want in this business, but I was taught one thing. The reason that your value in this professional wrestling is the amount that your ability is to sell tickets. And if you can sell tickets, you're worth your money being spent. But if you can't sell any tickets at the front door off of your name itself, or you're not going to do anything to try to further the show, to try to help sell tickets, you're wasting time. And you're definitely not someone that deserves any kind of money. I mean, I remember wrestlers. I remember old school cats that would tell you, hey, I might not be able to pay you a lot, but they'll tell you right out, I pay the guys that work hard. So if you go out there and you're only the first year in the business, so what if you only get a $20 payday? But you know what? If you get a $20 payday and you work your ass off and they're going to see the wealth, man, that guy brought in 30 guys. People are sitting in the front row to see him wrestle this week. Guess what? You could go to the promoter next week and say, hey, how about throwing some extra in my pay envelope? I'm drawing. I'm helping you bring in people in the door. I'm helping you promote. I'm helping everyone know about your show. Like right now, I pushed CWA. I didn't have to push CWA. Roger Gleaton didn't give me any extra benefit. I'm not getting no extra pay in my envelope for that. I didn't get any extra money for pushing the ladies' matches. But I work at that company. I mean, have a little pride of who you work for. I mean, how do you think in a million years you're ever going to go to the next level if you don't have respect for who you work for? I mean, you come out and you put your hand out, a promoter books you on a show, they offer to pay you XYZ, you agree on that dollar amount. Now, when you come in there, you better be professional and bust your ass. How the hell do you expect that man to pay you? How do you expect him to draw any kind of freaking tickets at the front door and be worth a damn? How do you expect him to make any money? I mean, let's be honest. We're not making $1 million, but the promoter's out there trying to draw something at the front door. He's trying to be able to work that town the next week, the next month he comes in. And guess what? No one shows up. He ain't going to be able to afford to run that town again. And guess what? The rest of those guys on the card that busted their ass, they're not going to have a wrestling booking next week or next month from that company, because he ain't going to be able to run a show. So that, and it's hard enough already for wrestlers to find a good place to apply their trade, to hone their craft, you know? Let's be honest. The more wrestling shows you do, the better you become in the world of professional wrestling, big country.
Exactly. And, I mean, I hate walking in the locker rooms. I usually get to a show, no offense, depending how far it is away from me, no less than 2 hours early. And I'll tell you what, I will have no problem going and helping pick up a board, pick up a piece of the frame, pick up the mats, pick up the ropes, and help set up that ring. No matter how long you've been doing this, they had a thing where Luke Gallows, you know, superstar, you know, he's been with TNA, been with WWE, you know, been up there in Japan, made money at the Wuha, comes down here, wrestles the indie show. Guess what? He's helping set up and break down a ring. You think he has to do that? No, he wants to do that because he respects his place. I sit there in the locker room and watch guys. Oh.
We've got a call in, big country.
Yo.
Hello.
Hello, Joey Nugs. This is Baby Doll.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is the one, the only Perfect 10 Baby Doll. I got my co-host, Big Country, in here as well, Baby Doll. It is an honor to have you here in the studio calling on the line. God bless you for being able to make it tonight.
Hey, Joey. How are you doing, babe?
I am doing phenomenal. I'm just fresh off the heart attack tour with Damian Wayne. We made a woman have a heart attack in Concord. I figured I'd let you know that if you haven't heard about it, you'd be proud of that. We got that kind of heat. That's that old school heat you told me about when we were coming up.
Wow, that's cool. That's cool. I had not heard about that.
Yes, miss. She grabbed her chest with one hand and gave us the finger with the other and said, if I have a heart attack, you son of a bitch, it's all your fault. I'm quite proud of that baby doll.
I'm sure you are. Where did all this happen?
This was in Concord, North Carolina, at the Moose Lodge.
Okay.
You know, say that with me, Moose Lodge. That just sounds fun to say. Say it, baby doll, Moose Lodge.
At the Moose Lodge. I got you. Did they have trophies on the wall?
Yeah, there was a couple trophies on the wall. Hopefully they'll hang one up for me and Damian Wayne for giving a lady a heart attack.
That's cool. I actually wrestled in an elk lodge up in the Pacific Northwest, and they actually had, like, elk heads on the wall. So.
Oh, I know what you mean now. Yeah, they did have a moose head on the wall that you're talking about, a moose head.
There you go.
Oh, that's why they call it the Moose Lodge, because they got moose heads hanging on the wall. That makes sense now. So, baby doll, I got Big Country here with me on the line. He's a big fan of yours as well. He's a baby doll mark. He doesn't like to admit it, though, but I'll put him on the spot and let everyone know he is.
Shoot, I freely admit that.
You either love me or hate me. I'll take either one.
I know growing up I hated you because I watched you on television. I used to shake my fist at you and call you that, and I mean it is a rated R show, but me being your friend, I won't repeat the words I used to call you. But you were great at doing what you did. I mean, you knew what it took to get your wrestler over. You knew what it took to get that heat. And your character was just a character I always remember since I was a little kid. Baby Doll was always there. She was, and I knew Baby Doll when you walked out that things was going to get funky, because Baby Doll only worked with the best wrestlers. So I knew things was going to get hot.
I know. I was very fortunate, because when you look at the guys that I worked with, I mean, how many of them are in the WWE Hall of Fame right now? Not too many girls can say that and brag about who they've worked with, but I think I can.
Yeah, you definitely can. The list goes on and on. I mean, who did you manage? I mean, if there was a name, you had your thumb, your seal of approval on them. Baby Doll touched them. They were magic. It just was like that. Always
well,
knew what it was.
And I have to give credit to Dusty, because Dusty didn't, like, overuse me or misuse me. When you look at it, the only time I did anything, it really meant something. And like what you said, when you saw me, you knew something was about to get shook up.
Mm-hmm. Baby Doll, you was always in the thick of things when things got funky. So let's start if you don't mind. Tell everyone, I know all about you. I know about your history, but the listeners don't know about Baby Doll's history. How did you get started in pro wrestling?
Really, I was born into it. Both of my parents were professional wrestlers. They wrestled in, like, the 50s and the 60s. My mom, Lorraine Johnson, she's world-famous girl wrestler at the time. She and Penny Banner won many tag team championships. She also won a lot of championships on her own. My dad was Nick Roberts. He wrestled from, like, the 50s on up into, like, maybe the early 80s. He was still doing some guest shows and referee appearances. They opened a promotion in Lubbock, Texas in the early 60s and worked out of the Amarillo office. We worked with Dory Funk Sr. and the NWA. So, like, everybody came through there whenever I was a little kid, from Dusty Rhodes when he first started out to the Hart. Stu Hart would send his boys down every summer so that they could kind of tour around with, like, Terry and Dory. And I met Tully when he was just going to college up at West Texas State. Stan Hansen, I'm trying to think of, like, everybody that went through there. Giant Baba, we got Andre the Giant once a year. We had the world champion, whoever the NWA world champion was. We got him at least twice a year so we could build up, you know, either a heel or a baby face to go against the world champion. At that time, especially in the late 60s, early 70s, there were so many wrestlers that went through Lubbock. It And then we ran shows every single week. So when you think about it, we had at least 51 shows a year that that we built stories up for. And then my dad was the promoter on TV every Saturday, and we had our local show on from like 2 to 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoons, and probably had anywhere from 200 to 300 people easily that had regular ringside seats. We would hold their ringside seats for them every week besides the whatever we sold on the bleacher seats. But it was kind of a fantasy come true type childhood, because here my dad was on TV and big, strong, good-looking guy, and my mom, you know, won Marilyn Monroe look-alike contest, and, you know, we got to do our shows every week, and whenever I was a little girl, we only got to go to the matches probably maybe 2 or 3 times a year. It was a big thing for us to be able to go and get all dressed up, sit on the back row ringside, and get to see the show. And then as soon as it seemed like we could carry 4 steel chairs, we were carrying 4 steel chairs and helping them set up the ring. So it changed very quickly. But when my brother and I got older and strong enough to where we could help out, then we were part of the crew. My brother was in the concession, and I sold programs, and my mom sold tickets, and my dad ran the show. So it really was a family business for probably 10 to 15 years. We did a lot of shows, and that's how I got into it. That's how I got into it, and I always wanted to be like on the other side, you know, but I just didn't quite know how to do it. And my dad always wanted me to go to school and do something other than wrestle or be in the wrestling business. And I just happened to hear my folks talking about they were looking for a girl to work with Gino Hernandez. And at the time, I had like this huge crush on Gino, and just thought that he was so dreamy and just the, you know, like the teenage crush. And I stuck off to a boyfriend's house and took my dad's book and called the Dallas office. And David Manning just happened to answer the telephone, and I pitched the idea to him. I was like, "Hey, David, I, you know, kind of heard you guys were looking for a girl, and what about me? You know, I'm smart, and maybe I'm pretty, and maybe you guys could use me." And I didn't really want in the business. I just wanted to work with Gino. And it turned out that they were just getting ready to go into a meeting upstairs with Fritz. And he was just like, "This may go." And he says, "Let me pitch it to Fritz. Let me see how it goes." And he says, "I'll call you right back." So I went in, and sure enough, about an hour later, I got the call from David, and he said that Fritz loves it. He said that this is just exactly what we were looking for. And I started the Sunday before Labor Day at Joe and Harry Coliseum there in San Antonio. Sold out crowd. Worked a match with Mike Von Erich against Gino Hernandez, and made my debut, and worked for a couple of months there in Dallas, and met Jake and my future brother-in-law, and got to work with some of the best of the best, and worked the Cotton Bowl, like maybe 6 weeks to the business, worked 3 matches in the sold out, you know, what we had partitioned off for the Cotton Bowl, and the 6-man tag, and a singles match with Stella, and Sunshine came back in, and then a couple of weeks after that, we worked a sold-out show there in Reunion Arena right at Thanksgiving, and then it all came to an end. They were going to work with Sunshine. They were just going to use Sunshine and let Stella and I go, because we had run her out, and that was going to be it. And I was just like, well, darn, and I really like working, and I like the whole business aspect of it, and travel and money, and it was so much fun. I didn't want it to end. Well, I had 2 more shots in Miami and Tampa, Christmas Day and the day after. Mm-hmm. And whenever I got to Florida, I knew that Michael Hayes was the booker down there, and I've known Michael for forever because he had worked against the Freebirds. Whenever I was in high school, I'd known Michael really well. And as soon as I landed, I went to the first liquor store that I got, bought the biggest bottle of Jack Daniels I could find, and went to the show. and was like, "Hi, Michael, how are you doing?" And had a bottle of Jack Daniels and asked him if he could use me, and he was like, "Oh, no." And he was, they were getting ready to shut Florida down because Florida had slowed down, especially like in January and February. And he says, "But Dusty Rhodes is over in the other dressing room." And he says, "He's really getting ready to turn things up in the Mid-Atlantic." And he said, "That's the place where you want to go." He says, "They're really getting ready to do something over there." And he said, "Just go over there and talk to him." He says, "You know him, right?" And I said, and I remembered, you know, like from whenever I was a little girl. And I said, "Sure." So I kind of regretted not having that bottle of Jack Daniels now. But I went over there and talked to Dusty. And Dusty, Tully was standing right there with Dusty. And they were kind of talking and kind of gave him my idea. Well, I had no idea that they were actually looking for a girl for Tully. And they'd done a couple of vignettes on it, and it was like I walked into the perfect situation.
Wow. And, that's when you went to Mid-Atlantic?
Yes, and so I told them who I was and that I've been working and that maybe they could use me, and just went ahead and did my match. And whenever I was going out to work against Della, I looked over, and Dusty's standing outside of his dressing room, and Tully's standing outside of his dressing room. And I go up and have my match with Stella, and I start heading back, and I look back at the dressing room, and both Dusty and Tully are standing outside their dressing room. They're still standing there. And I knew I had the spot because they liked my match. Because if they were still out there, they liked what they saw. If they weren't there, then it was like, darn it, I didn't interest them. I didn't entertain them. But they were still out there, and I was supposed to start, like, the end of February. This was, like, you know, Christmas Day. So they wanted me to kind of build it up and bring me in. The tentative thing was, like, the end of February. Well, then once they got back to North Carolina, then I got a phone call. It was like, "Well, you head up here, like, the first part of February." And I was like, "Sure, whenever you need me, I can be there." And then I got a phone call a couple of days after that. It was like, "Can you be here tomorrow?" And that's when it started. And it's because everything started clicking and everything. I guess they had gone back and looked at some tapes and started putting things together. And that's when we did the video of me flying in on the Learjet. And it just took off from there. And it just seemed like from the first time that they had me on TV, Crockett Promotions just literally blew up. It really did.
Wow.
We just started selling out Greensboro and selling out Charlotte, selling out Richmond, and it was just sell out almost every night. It was crazy.
Baby Doll, before we continue on hearing about the Mid-Atlantic, I got a caller on the line from 803 area code. 803 caller, who's on the line?
Hey, Nugget, this is David.
Oh,
hey,
David Garrett.
How are you, Nicola?
Hey, David, long time no see. I hear you're going to... you've got my daughter this weekend.
Yes, I do. You know, Baby Doll came down and did a great job in CWA. And I'm sure that Samantha will be coming down to tear it up as well. How have you been, Nicola?
I've been very well. Doing well. I'm living up in the mountains now. Got a really good boyfriend, and it's a really good good spot for Baby Doll right now.
Good, good. Nugs, I appreciate you pushing the delays on your podcast. I couldn't get the link to work, so if you don't mind, if I can hang in and listen in, that's okay.
That'd be fine. If you don't mind, though, if you can mute your microphone just to kill any background noise and make it quiet as possible for playback, that'd be appreciated.
Okay. All right. Notice
feel
I do appreciate it.
Feel free to. No, we appreciate you calling in, David. If anybody that doesn't know, this is David Garrett. David Garrett is a friend of pro wrestling. He is a promoter. He's a booker. He is one of the guys, and he's a friend of the wrestlers in the back. He always is from day one. I've known him 12 years, and Dave, you've always been there and tried to give the guys a fair shake. You've always tried to work to bend the liaisons between promoters and the booker and the wrestlers. You're a class act, David, and I know if you give someone your word, you'll break your back to always keep the word. You're one of the you're one of the most honest guys in the business, sir.
Well, I appreciate that, Nugs. I've always tried to be whenever I was back in the business, we never really had anybody to look out for us. So I like trying to look out for the guys and the girls as much as I can. I'm going to hit the mute button. Hope y'all have a good night.
All right.
All right. Nice talking to you, David. Don't be a stranger, man.
All right. Thank you.
Tell your wife and girls I said hey.
Say what now?
Tell your wife and girls I said hello.
Well, I no longer have a wife, but I will tell my girls that you said hey, and Joy just had a baby, and Amber's fixing to have one, so I'm granddad like twice coming up, and I've already got one from my son, who's 4 years old. But I will tell them that you asked about them, and take care and have a good night.
All right, David. Hope to see you soon.
Thank you, David. Yeah, we're back, baby doll.
Okay. Well, that was awkward. I didn't know that he was no longer married, but I haven't seen him for like years, but sure.
That's all right. David's in a better place now. I mean, sometimes it doesn't work out, but his wife went on, and she's going to live a happy life, and David's going to find his happiness. He's one of those cool guys that stuck around through thick and thin to be there for his family. But especially, yeah, life goes on, and people get happy, and Dave's still in a good place. He's playing in a great country music band, and they got a record on the charts, so he's doing well.
Oh, well, good. Maybe
we can, one of these weekends we could all get off, we could actually go hear his country western band play, and we could rock with our socks off and have a great time. But let's get back to the Mid-Atlantic before somebody else calls, because that's one thing I do pitch the phone number for people to call in, so you might get some people calling and asking questions.
Be ready for
anything, baby doll. But let's get back to the Mid-Atlantic. You got your call. You brought into the Mid-Atlantic. Perfect timing. They were looking for somebody and threw, and the shine was on you, had the aura on you, and they said, "That's the woman. We need her." And
that was it. That started. I packed up. I had a 300ZX Nissan, brand new at the time. Loaded that up and headed cross country and hit the road with Tali, and it seemed like the very first year we only had 15 days off the whole year. I mean, we didn't have weekends off. We didn't have holidays off. I mean, out of the whole year, we wrestled or did something promotional every single day for the whole year. It was just crazy. And Tali and I just, it clicked. I mean, that we got along so well, and people said that Tali was hard to deal with or difficult. I mean, Tali is Tali. I mean, that's just who he is. And if you try and make him something he's not, that's when you get upset with him. But we never had any problems. It just seemed like most of the time that he slept and I drove, and or we got to the airport, and I think what was in the first year and a half, or I had over 1,000,000 miles with Eastern Airlines. It was crazy, and Crockett Promotions bought that huge Gulfstream for us because we were traveling so much, and Dusty was working his magic, and we were selling out towns every night, and then all of a sudden we were running 2 shows a night, and then sometimes we were running 3 shows a night. And it was like, sure, there might have been an A team, a B team, and a C team, but if you took the main event and the card from either of those shows, you were getting a big show, whether you were in Rock Hill or Richmond or Greensboro, or we were even going out to Los Angeles and running shows out there, trying to run with the big dogs. And there for a while, everything was, it was just so good between the Bashes and Starrcade and working against Magnum. And I think being a part of probably one of the best matches in the history of professional wrestling was an I Quit match between Magnum and Tali, and I got to be a part of all of that, and it was just, if there was ever a spot to be in, I had it, and I was very lucky to have Dusty and Tully looking out for me and kind of plotting my path, because it couldn't have gotten any better than what I had.
Definitely. I mean, you were in the right spot at the right time, but more than anything, I mean, I hear people say you're at the right spot at the right time, but, you know, beyond the right spot at the right time, you had to have something to offer them, because they didn't just pick up anybody. They had the right lady at the right spot.
Well, that's why it all clicked. I mean, if it just Kelly could have gotten like the prettiest little girl, and yeah, she could have been the perfect 10, and I was just so much the opposite of it that it just that it worked, and then I evolved into the character and the position, and then I totally changed my look between like whenever I first started working with Tully to 2 years later, like whenever I worked with Slayer, I was able to change and change my work style, and I learned so much, and it was whenever I look back, I mean it was so much fun because I was so young and I really didn't realize what was going on, and now that I look back with like who I was really working with and who I was running with, I mean I was running with the best of the best. And when you look at, there's so many girls in the business now and in the dressing rooms and in the shows and stuff. Back and then I was the only girl. I had no one to look up to or to create a character after or to even copy. I mean, I was like the only one. I was the first one to go out there and do what I did, and it was scary and it was fun, and God wouldn't have changed it for anything, but no one did what I did, and no one will be able to do what I did.
Wow. That's phenomenal. We got another caller on the line, 410 area code. Who do we have on the line, people? You're on the line live with
Onyx.
The living legend, Baby Doll.
You got Onyx, a.k.a. Bronco Billy.
Okay. This is a Baby Doll, even if you don't know who this is another lady wrestler that's going to be at CWA, the other wrestling match that your daughter's not going to be in.
Okay.
So she's calling
Saturday.
In and showing her support. This Saturday, yes, from Orangeburg, South Carolina. And I do believe that you're going to be wrestling. Here's the wrestler's name that they got you against. You're going to be wrestling against Kimberly Spades. I don't know. And Kimberly Spades, you better watch yourself. She's dirty. I was letting you know that out the gate. I'm not trying to give you any extra pointers, but watch your back.
There's no way she's more dirty than me.
Okay, well, we're looking forward to seeing how dirty you can get. It's going to be a great event, and definitely free to hang out and ask Baby Doll some questions during the interview if you'd like. I appreciate you calling in.
Okay, thank you. I will. Hi, Baby Doll.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great, thank you.
All right, good luck on Saturday.
Thank you.
It's a great night. We're showing respect to ladies of pro wrestling. This is wonderful. That's the future. You're one of those people, Baby Doll, that these other ladies get a chance to look at and say, she's the one that started it all. Without us, hey, they wouldn't. You're the bottom of the well, Baby Doll. You're the one that, because like you said, there wasn't no one else for you to follow. There was
Honey,
no other. You.
I don't want to be at the bottom of the well. I want to be the shining star, baby.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, you got to. Everything starts from somewhere. You build from somewhere, you know. And you started from the bottom, and you made your way all the way to the top. I mean, you were at that spot that everyone dreams of. How high? I mean, what was the biggest card that can you remember that you guys wrestled in front of? What was the biggest crowd? Do you remember?
The biggest crowd. Let me think. 20. Yeah, I think the Bash is probably like 20-some thousand. I can't remember which ones that we went, because we had the 14 of them and 86, I think it was what it was. There were several of them that were like over 20,000 people, which was big back then. I mean, now it's like, whatever. But when you look at like having a whole month, we had 14 bashes and most of them were over 15,000 people. That's a lot of people to work in front of night after night after night. And then plus with all the other shows that we were running between like Charlotte and Greensboro and Atlanta, Richmond, Norfolk, Baltimore, those were all sellouts too there for like maybe a year and a half, almost 2 years. Those towns were, if they weren't sold out, they were pretty close to them, and we were running those towns once a month. So therefore, a run, it was just crazy how many people, you know, that we were selling out to every single night.
What is it like to go down there on the front row and you look out and all you see is a sea of people? What is that like? Is that how nerve wracking is that for the first time?
it's scary as hell. I don't know if it's harder working in front of 30,000 people or working in front of 30 people. I think it's harder working in front of 30 people because you've got to like really work for like every single one of those people. If you've got 30,000 people, you feed off that electricity. You feed off that energy. It's just you can feel it. You can be back in the dressing room, and you can feel that anticipation. You can feel them wanting to see you and wanting to see what you want to do. Shoot, working in front of 30,000 people is a whole lot easier than working in front of 30. Let's just put it that way, and I've done both a lot.
Now, I remember you telling me stories before how crazy the fans would get, and tell me, how crazy were the fans?
They believed. I mean, there's no other way to put it. But let me get this to you. We were so good at what we did, believed in everything that we told them, that we said that we were going to do. When we came into that town, people believed that we were going to kick somebody's ass, that there was no question that whenever Tully and Magnum wrestled against each other, and if you beat me, I'm sorry, but that shit was real. There was no doubt in it. There was no doubt in people's mind that Tully hated Magnum, and Magnum hated Tully, and that Dusty hated Flair, and that Dusty was going to chase that world championship for the rest of his life, that he was the working man's man, and that everybody believed in what we did. It's so different from what it is today, and I'm not taking away from what the product today, because what my daughter is doing and what the girls in the WWE and across this world are doing, it's a whole different product, and the people enjoy what they're seeing. But back whenever I was working in the 80s, it was totally different because people actually believed what we were doing, and they fed into it so much that they would literally attack us going to the ring. I mean, we didn't have security. We didn't have guardrails. We literally, Tully and I had to fight our ways not only going to the ring, but then once we wrestled, we had to fight going back to the ring. And being a girl, it was, I mean, I got my hair pulled. I went back. I had spit my hair. I got groped, the whole thing. It was kind of funny just to bring that emotion out of people with just something that we were wrestling. That was it, you know, and they believed it. And it's so different from today, but it is what it is, and we were really good at what we did.
Yeah, that was a difference. I can imagine, I mean, that type of crowd, I mean, 30,000 people spitting on you. You might as well get to the point where you didn't even, you probably just jumped in a car and drove back to the hotel. Why even bother trying to go to the bathroom and clean up? I mean,
well, and see, like with the girls now, they've got better setups. With me, I usually would have a chair in like the corner of the dressing room and read, or I'd be able to sometimes have like a small room off to the side. But yeah, it was just literally sometimes I have to just sit there with spit and crap in my hair until I got back to the hotel, and the checks were good, and I did laugh all the way to the bank.
And I'm going to tell you, I still think it's phenomenal to this very day that you built such a reputation for yourself on that level to this very day, that your name is still important enough that you can go and get booked at different venues. Now, this Spartanburg show that we were talking about, I already put it over big. The Battle of the Sexes, that card has that old Mid-Atlantic NWA feel to it. Big Country was already talking about perhaps asking for the night off so we could both drive in a car to go see that event, because it's one of those kind of events.
Right.
And And
it'd be something to see. I mean, when you look at it, you've got Road Warriors, you've got Rock and Roll Express, you've got Jim Cornette, myself. It's a huge, huge card. And BTW.
Powers of Pain are going to be there. Badass Billy Gunn, Big Papa Pump. They stacked that card up. I don't know who Big Time Wrestling is, but he's got one hell of a payday to pay those people off. God.
Well, that's like every show, because they're in Raleigh the night before Spartanburg. I just worked a show with them in Morganton. They had Ricky the Dragon Steamboat and Jeff Hardy, Road Warrior Animal. They packed the cards, and the shows that I've been to with the Big Time Wrestling have been really top quality shows. And then look at it like when you're saying that, like the name Baby Doll is still, people remember me, and that's crazy, because whenever I do like legend shows or fan fest, people bring up like their DVDs and their VHS tapes and 8x10s that I know that I've been a part of their household for like the past 30 years. I've been on a shelf somewhere, but I've been a part of their house, and that now I know a lot of the boys downgrade the WWE Network, and they want money from it, and they want royalties. I look at it this way. The WWE Network is making me infamous. It's making me immortal. Every time I get another loop on their play, and someone tunes it in for the first time, some kid that's 16 years old that's never seen Mid-Atlantic or Ric Flair and Baby Doll against Dusty Rhodes or the I Quit match with Magnum and Tully, they're making us immortal. They're probably getting me another booking. So, Vince McMahon, thank you. Thank you for the WWE Network. Thank you for making these tapes and these videos and this footage available to people that normally would have never, ever been able to see it. These tapes, whenever my dad had his shows with Championship Wrestling and Lubbock and the wrestling that we did, those tapes are gone. There's no way to get those back. And here, Vince, in his way, I know it's kind of a money-making way for him, but whenever you look at it, he's made all of this available to whoever wants it, the history of wrestling, and being able to give wrestling fans something that they would have never been able to have access to. And that...
Let me tell you something. I'm not pitching this product, but for $9.99 for all the wrestling you could ever imagine you could watch, it's one hell of a deal.
Exactly. Plus, you get a pay-per-view, and you know, it's really, really a good deal. I mean, and I know a lot of the guys want another payday and that they think that they have royalties on it. And whenever, I mean, I signed the back of the check, it's like just like they did. Whenever we signed that check, we signed over the rights to whatever we did that week. And take it for granted, we had no idea that it was ever going to be like this. And there was no way that we could. Shoot, we laughed whenever Vince brought out the wrestling ring. And we were thinking, who's going to play with a wrestling ring and little dolls, little action figures? And we were like, we were all flabbergasted whenever they sold a million of them like the first 6 months. And then we just knew that wrestling took off in a different direction then. I mean, the marketing just completely changed. But I whenever we signed the back of the checks, we signed over our rights and our royalties. Now, I'm sure that we could go back and try and get, you know, some money for whatever we're doing, but I don't want to have my face blurred out of their videos, you know what I'm saying, because he might become spiteful and take me out of there, and believe me, I'm so appreciative every time, you know, that gets played, and I have fans, you know, like young guys, you know, that come up that weren't even alive whenever this was taking place, and that know the matches and know the characters and know, you know, the storylines, and they've just all been brought into it in another generation. It's phenomenal, and I'm glad I'm a part of it.
I think it's phenomenal too. You know what I like about it the most is you don't have any kind of sour grapes about your career whatsoever. You're appreciative of everything, every opportunity that you were given, and you made the most of it, obviously, because your name is still known and it's still relevant in the world of professional wrestling, and that's phenomenal.
And nobody can say a bad thing about me. And nobody can really say a bad thing about me. I grew up with the reputation of my dad and my mom behind me. I never wanted to do something that, hey, you know, your daughter's acting up or not acting right, and you need to take care of that or whatever. I always knew that whatever I did would get back to my dad, and I never wanted to face his wrath. So I always look at it this way. Whenever I was working, I always thought that I'd have children, and that one day, you know, I'd have to account to them of my actions, and I didn't want them being embarrassed or ashamed of what their mom did. And take it, girls kind of go in a different avenue, and they have different agendas, and girls are girls, and they like to pull their dresses up over their head. But I was never that type of girl, and I was strictly business. And, you know, to do interviews where you hear Flair and Tully and the guys that I work with say nothing but good things about me, I mean, that says it all. And now that I have a daughter in the business, you know, she's got some really big shoes to follow in, and some big steps to go back into. And it's going to be interesting to see what she does with the career that we've provided for her, and kind of the, I don't know if it's going to help her or hinder her, you know, because maybe it might have been better for her to just go in and as Samantha Starr and not have the reputation that she has, and see what she could have done. You know, sometimes I wonder how that would have worked out.
Yeah, but let's be honest. I can understand. I mean, she's a namesake. I mean, she's, what, third generation wrestling now. I mean, her grandfather was a wrestler, her grandmother was a wrestler, her mother worked in the business as a famous wrestling manager and wrestler. I mean, she's third generation. But at the end of the deal, Vince McMahon ain't handing over no contracts if you don't have no skills. You're not getting bookings in professional wrestling just because you have a name. Because at the end of the day, when you wrestle, people's got to say, what's she about? Is she any good when she wrestles?
Right.
Does she understand what's going on? And I've
exactly.
seen your daughter wrestle. And she has what it takes. She's got
right.
the look. She's got the skill. She understands what she's going on. She has the good psychology of the wrestling, which makes a difference. So, I mean, I can see her down the road getting that break and someone noticing her on that level. She deserves a break. Just as much as anyone else, she deserves being looked at. Say, okay, give a look at this young lady. Does she have what it takes to take it to the next level? I think she has. She surrounded herself with nothing but professionals from day one. So, I mean,
right.
she takes it very serious. So, yeah, I think
your
daughter has a big future in wrestling.
Oh, I hope so, because she really has worked really, really hard for this. Well, you knew whenever I moved into the Mid-Atlantic, she went to every show with me. You know, she was studying stuff. She was talking to people. She was in the ring taking bumps whenever I got to the show early. You know, she was up there, you know, learning how to fall. And we, you know, just getting into the ring is a feat in itself. And I wish nothing but the best for her. And I think that she's doing very well, you know, with her endeavors. And I just wish that there were more places that would use girls like her and that would use them properly. My other daughter, my oldest daughter, also is a musician. She's a very talented guitarist and has her band, the Never Knots. And between the two of my girls, they're very, very talented. And I'm so fortunate and so blessed to be their mom. I really am. It's one of the best things I've ever done. It is the best thing I've ever done.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, I mean, having kids, I don't have kids, but I know they give you some way, they somewhat ground you. You're not just living for yourself at that moment. You're living for somebody else.
Oh, Joe,
so,
you've been on the road with me. You know how much my kids mean to me.
Oh, yeah, they're your world. I mean, I've done many a road trips with Baby Doll, and the kids are in the back seat. They're riding along. And like I said, Samantha Starr, your daughter, she's put the time in. She started out as a valet. I mean, she's put the time in. She understands wrestling. So, I mean, I think she's going to do great
time.
In the future.
Oh,
yeah, she's
so.
Always working. Yeah, I think so, too. So
are you going to the BTW show?
I want to. I really want to. I think I'm going to go. I mean,
see if I can get Big Country maybe to give up a booking. I don't know how important his booking is, but I might have to see about riding with Big Country up to the show. But, yeah, I want to come to a Spartanburg and far. And I'm going to tell you something. Spartanburg has a place for the best Philly cheesesteak you can get in the Southeast, and I'll take you there if we go.
I just I made my own version of a Philly cheesesteak today, and I'd done it with I had bought a big brisket and fixed that yesterday, and then today I sliced it really thin and sauteed up some onions and a few mushrooms and gonna melt some cheese on it, put a big old piece of bread. It's gonna be good.
Oy vey, you're killing me. I might be heading out to the country. I kind of hide it, but I'm a self-proclaimed cheesesteak junkie. I'm a fanatic. So if I find out there's a good place to get it, I'm American through and through. You give me two pieces of bread and something to go in between, it's a meal.
There you go. Yeah,
the Earl of Sandwich.
Yeah, between you and me, we've not missed too many meals, darling.
No, I'm not missing any meals. So we have Mid-Atlantic. What happened after Mid-Atlantic? Did you go someplace else, or did you go back to it again, didn't you?
Okay, well, let me see. Mid-Atlantic, I worked with Tully and Dusty and then worked with Flair. And whenever I was working with Flair, I had gotten married to Sam Houston. And unfortunately, that was the downfall of my career. I did the one thing that they didn't want me to do, and that was get married, and especially to Sam Houston. It just seemed like it just irked everyone in the wrong way. And we were young and in love and didn't see why just being a couple was going to ruin everyone's future. And we thought that we would show them that our love was stronger than their hate and their money, and they proved us wrong, because only a couple of weeks after we had gotten married, they shipped Sam off to Kansas City, and since I had just gotten married and wanted to be with my husband, I asked Dusty, I said, well, can I go to Kansas City too? And I regret that to this day. But
So what was the problem that Baby Doll had to stay single and be available in all the guys' minds for the character of Baby Doll, or did they think that you shouldn't be marrying someone that's lower in the card, or what was the problem? Or was it a combination of both, or what?
It was all of that. They basically wanted me, and Dusty had said that they wanted me to stay into a Marilyn Monroe character, where just single and available, like what you said, and just hated to tell them, but I think Marilyn was married like 5 times. But they just wanted that persona, you know, and I don't blame them, because when you look at it and going on the road, if you're single and on the road, life is certainly different than married and family on the road, because all of a sudden you have another priority, and then all of a sudden your mind is not in the game, and you're not quite as into it as what you were whenever you were single. All of a sudden you've got someone at the house that you're worried about having to check into. You've got someone at the house that you're paying bills for. You've got someone at the house that you've got to worry for. You've got someone at the house that, are they going to be at the airport whenever you get there? You know, it's a whole different mindset than being single. And now that I look back at it, we could have done it a whole different way, but it is what it is, and I wouldn't give up my kids for nothing, because if I changed what I did back then I wouldn't have had my kids, and I wouldn't trade that for anything. And even starving in Kansas City and checks going from, you know, $3,500 to $5,000 a week down to $350 a week, and having to drive 500 miles a day, it was crazy. It really was. I mean, if you talk to George South, he starved. He had to leave. He was about to die out there. And I remember having Thanksgiving for everyone. There was, I believe I cooked for 17 people, and I fixed chicken steaks, and I had 7 different kinds of vegetables, and I made homemade pies, and I think I actually mashed like 20 pounds of potatoes for everybody.
Wow.
And had everybody over there, and it was had Thanksgiving, and that was like right at the time that Magnum had his wreck, and I came back, and Cornette had gotten hurt in the scaffold match, and I had to take his place, and I came back for a short time with that. And then Sam, I can't remember if we went to like UWF, but we moved to Dallas after that, and we started working with Global, or with UWF with his dad. And then Sam went to work for WWE, and then I had kids, and that was it. And then here we are now.
Wow.
So there was a lot of bouncing around there for a while, and Sam working with WWE was an experience. And then I worked a little bit with the UWF we did some cat fights with Missy Hyatt and Sunshine. And Dark Journey, we did a loop with that, and I got pregnant.
How were those matches? Were they skilled matches, or was it promoters just wanting ladies roll around in a ring, or did they actually give you a good spot to work?
No, it was Bill Watts. We were working for Bill Watts, and Bill, I don't want to speak for him, but I don't think that he really liked girls on the card. He liked, you know, the more formatted, you know, like, he didn't think that girls had a place in the business type thing. He was, like, very, very old school. And I just got the feeling that he liked the money that we brought in. He just didn't like us. So it was we just kind of got in there and kind of, They kind of did the roll around thing. I was on the outside of the ring until the end of it, and then I went in and got the pin. There was skill to it. There was really no skill.
You did the classic heel on the outside, let them beat themselves up, and you came in and mopped up and was left over kind of angle.
Exactly, which
I love.
Right.
That's great.
Well,
I hate that Bill Watts didn't respect the way ladies wrestle in the way he should. That's horrible.
Well, it could have been really a lot better, because look at the girls that you had in the show. But because you're not going to get any better than Missy and Sunshine and myself. And Journey was very good, too. She was just, no one helped Journey. I think that she could have been a lot better if she had had some guidance and actually knew more about the business before she got into it. But it could have been a lot better than what it was.
Now who was she the valet for?
She came in with Dick Slater. She started out first with Dick Slater, and they worked Louisiana and the UWF there for or Mid South there for a long time. And then she worked with Missing Link, and then she came in with the Four Horsemen. That's when Dusty brought her in to work with Tully.
Gotcha. So let me see, what else? So you went to UWF, you worked down there, and then you got your spot to come back up. You got to work the ladies wrestling match. If you could change anything, and I know you say you're happy with everything, because obviously you had your kids and your daughters, which are beautiful, beautiful blessings. But if you could change anything along the line, and just enough that maybe it wouldn't even make a difference in your career, but do something different and something, would you change anything?
If I could have changed anything, it was probably to have been able to work with Flair longer. I had only gotten to work with him for a couple of months, and then had gotten shipped off. But this was the very, very first start of like when the Four Horsemen was just starting to evolve. They were just starting to flash the Four Horsemen. Arn had done the promo of the Apocalypse, and that whole era was just starting. And maybe if I'd stuck around longer just to see what would have happened like in the next 6 months, just to have a run like with Flair and the World's Championship and the Four Horsemen, just to have that money and that prestige and just go into a different total character for Baby Doll, like more glitz and glam.
Because I remember when they did that, they brought in J.J. Dillon, and he kind of gave you the shaft where he was
They ran the storyline like they gave you a vacation. Well, what do you mean? You gave me the vacation. I never gave you a vacation. Well, they kind of shafted you around. I remember that storyline.
Well, it actually was supposed to be that they were planning on putting me with Buddy Landell at that time, and Landell was going to have a run at the NWA championship and the whole thing. If I remember this right, now things change, and maybe I didn't hear you, but from my understanding was that they were going to put the world belt on Buddy, that they were going to put me with Buddy and do a run with it like that. Well, Buddy, unfortunately, through his addictive behavior, didn't show up at TV that morning. And it really irked it. I mean, the one time that he had to go to TV, the one time that this was, he missed his big break. He really and truly missed his big break. And Buddy was actually out of commission for a couple of days. Nobody knew where he was at. And anybody who knows Buddy was infamous for just disappearing for days at a time. And
well, obviously,
so,
Buddy liked to party.
Oh, yeah, he liked to party. So he didn't show up for TV. They ended up firing him. And so Dusty went in a total different direction that I believe it was that night in Greensboro is when we did the switch, when they put J.J. with Tully, and then I went with Dusty. And then I had the run with Dusty there for probably, 6 to 8 months before I turned heel and went with Flair that summer. But, yeah, I was supposed to go with Buddy Landell.
Was that the same run where they had the video vignettes where they forced you to help him and that you worked on his dude ranch and all that? Was that the same one, or is that another storyline?
Well, that was whenever I first got to the Mid-Atlantic area with Tully, was when we did this 30-day match at the very first Great American Bash, where Dusty won me for the 30 days. That's when we did the vignette where I was out there at Nelson Royal's ranch, swapping out the horse stall and scooping that out, and then the golf on Floyd. That was actually during the 30 days. Because actually that kind of was funny because Dusty felt sorry for me because people were actually, like, he saw the abuse of what I was going through, like going to the ring. And we were actually in Fayetteville. We were headed back to the dressing room, and he had the bull rope. So he wrapped the bull rope around my neck and was, like, pulling me back. And when he's pulling me back through the crowd, grabbed my hair. So Dusty's pulling me on with a neck with a bull rope going one way, and a fan is, like, standing on a chair pulling my hair going the other way, and I'm, like, caught in the middle. I can't go anywhere.
Wow.
So I go to sling back just at the fan so that they let go, and out of the corner of my eye, it's a pregnant woman, and I mean she is pregnant, standing on a chair, and she's got double handfuls of my hair, and my fist is like headed for her stomach, and I actually, it was like the cartoon, like the, you know, like where you stop and the sparks fly and everything, and then it just barely tapping her, but I twisted out, I got out, and I headed back to the dressing room. I just knew I was going to get sued over that one for hitting a pregnant woman, but at that point, Dusty saw how hot this was getting that he actually gave me almost a week off. Just to where he had sent me off to Hawaii, and I sold his credit cards and his Diners Club and went to Hawaii and sent him that shirt. But he did one of the best promos ever whenever I was gone on that one. But I actually went to Texas and saw my mom and came back and went back with Tully, and it was a good run. It really was.
Nice. So if you could think back any famous, like, road stories or ribs, can you share any with us?
I'm going to tell you one story, and then I'm going to get out of here, Joey.
Okay, I understand.
The best rib I ever saw and was ever, like, a part of, but I wasn't really a part of, was when Arn Anderson made his debut in the Mid-Atlantic area. And we'd all heard kind of about him and that he was going to come up here and he was a solid worker and had hurt, you know, just a little bit, not too much. Well, when he was in the dressing room, he's like lacing up his boots. Well, the police came in the dressing room, and the police never come in the dressing room. And they asked for Marty Lundy. And everybody's kind of looking around like, Marty? Who's Marty? And Arn's like lacing up his boots, and he looks over his glasses, and he says, yeah, that's me. And they said, well, we need to talk to you. So he's like, okay, and, you know, what do you do? You know, there's like four or five police officers, and they're asking to speak with you. It's like, okay, so he leaves. Well, the story was that they had come up to ask him some questions because a girl from down in Florida had called up and said that she was pregnant and that she was underage and that Arn Anderson was a dad. And that they were going, all you hear, you could hear kind of this conversation going on, and Arn's denying everything, and I never was with her. I know who you're talking about, but that's, I never laid a hand on her. I don't know what you're talking about. Just deny, deny, deny. And the officers were like, yes, and that her dad's really upset. Her dad's wanting us to take care of this. And you could just see Arn just getting more and more frustrated and more just, because he knows that something's bad and he's going to go to jail, and here he's got this big break and he's not even going to be able to wrestle. And how is he going to go to jail with wrestling trunks on and one shoe on and a boot on? And it was just, well, to make it all short, it had ended up, Flair had set up the whole thing. Everything, got the police in on it. He had told the story. He had found out a girl that Arn had been with, the whole thing, so that all you hear whenever they're taking Arn away is like, damn it, Flair, damn it, I'll get you. I don't know how I'm going to get you, but I'm going to get you. And because here all of a sudden everybody thinks he's a pedophile, number one, to begin with. Like, he's messing around with young girls and getting them pregnant, and we're getting this bad idea of who he is. And then they're hauling him away, and God, they've never arrested somebody out of the dressing room before, and Flair had set it all up.
Wow. That's phenomenal. Well, baby doll, I know that you're busy. You've probably got 6 or 10 wrestling events you got to go to this week alone. So I don't want to monopolize your time, but I do ask, if possible, I'd like to reserve the right to be able to bring you back for another interview another time. Perhaps we can get your daughter to be in there. It would be great. We could talk both of you at the same time, maybe.
That would be awesome. I look forward to it, Joey. Just let me know when you need me.
Baby doll, I appreciate you coming on. It is an honor and a privilege to have a living legend on the show. And we will continue to praise and wave your flag over here. I appreciate you calling in, and it was wonderful. If you know anybody else, any other legends that you could send our way for interviews, hint, hint, I would be honest and love the rub.
I got you.
Well, baby, doll, we love you over
hopefully
here.
I'll see you February 27th in Spartanburg.
Yeah, I think I might try to sneak out, because as of right now, I don't have any bookings, so. I think I'll probably sneak out that way and see you in Spartanburg.
You have to come see me kick Cornette's ass.
Sounds good to me. I'd love to see you kick Cornette's ass.
Might have to do a hurricanrana off the top. I keep telling my boyfriend I'm going to do a hurricanrana off the top. He doesn't believe me.
I'm going to videotape that hurricanrana and kick it off the top. Yeah. Well, baby doll,
right,
I appreciate you calling it. Big country, think about it, baby doll.
Baby doll, thank you for coming on. I appreciate the heck out of it.
All right, big country. Nice talking to you. Hope to meet you someday.
God bless you, baby doll. We'll talk to you some other time. Thank you.
All right. Bye, Joey. Bye, big country.
Oh, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Phenomenal. Big country, we had baby doll, the perfect 10 on the show. How's that?
I know, and I've met her about like 9 or 10 times before. She's done so many shows down there in APW in Chester when I first started out. I got to meet her. I met Michaela when she was, I believe she was dating Ty Tyson at that time. But, yeah, she's, you know, the vignettes you were talking about, the thing with her and Dusty and Tully, man, those just like, I mean, Tully and Dusty had a good feud, but when you added Baby Doll to that factor, it just like upped the ante, and, you know, and made that feud so much more.
Yeah, she's somebody that definitely added into an angle was so much nicer. It was just like cherry on top of a huge ice cream cone.
Well, she knew how to do her job. I mean, nowadays it's just girls are worried about, hey, are my boobs falling out of my shirt, or, you know, my ass hanging out of my shorts. You know, she was a very good-looking woman, but she also knew how to do a job. And she was dominant in a man-dominated sport. You know, she was very dominant in what she did. She made sure that she commanded respect and that, you know, people needed to pay attention to her. And that, you know, nowadays that's not really, I mean, you know, not saying anything about the women of today, they bust their ass too, but, you know, it's more about tits and ass and selling product. You know, selling
t-shirts. Not always. Not always. Some of these ladies out here really work their asses off. I mean,
oh, most definitely. Especially the ones.
We got Onyx on the line now. Onyx, you heard the interview. Tell us your opinion on someone as someone in a lady wrestler and wrestling and looking at someone like Baby Doll.
Baby Doll belongs on the shelf where Baby Doll should be. And I'm going to look for her daughter and start collecting some belts.
There you go.
There you go. I'm ready. You know what it is?
You're ready to rock and roll. So where is home for Onyx?
Right now I'm in Maryland. Was in LA for 10 years. And I just go wherever I can possibly go or want to go to wrestle, because for me, it's the love and the fun, not always so much the money. And I know God gave me this gift, very strong, doing great. And I'm here to support and be there for independent companies, wrestlers, people trying to make it, show them the way, help them. But when I'm in the ring, Baby Doll going to get put back on as many belts as I can from her daughter.
There you go. So you're all business. So who trained you? How did you get your start in a business?
I went to Women of Wrestling, WOW, which is GLOW, Glamorous Ladies of Wrestling. And then I trained with UPW for a little bit with all the big, big boys. So I can take a bump, no problem. I'd rather wrestle men. And I did George St. Pierre MMA workout video, Rush Fit. I take my sport seriously. I try to eat right, train right, think right, be right, and do right. Now, if some boobies and butts hang out, that's cool too, though.
Yeah, that's cool. Definitely. You definitely have those assets.
You were talking about boobies and butts earlier.
Yeah, but I think more than women's wrestling than that. I mean, I grew up watching the Fabulous Moolah, and when I grew up in Pennsylvania where Fabulous Moolah was the ladies' champ for years. So I remember seeing her come to my hometown, and I had respect for women wrestlers. I would watch her kick the living guts out of other wrestlers, and you just knew when you had someone of old school wrestlers like Moolah that chick could wrestle. She could,
you know,
go out
completely. Completely. You know, I see women maybe an actress or trying to do that, but this is a real sport.
Right.
You do have to give it to women to even get in the ring for that. That's not what anybody can do.
What do you think of the old school wrestling comparison to the wrestling that's for women now?
I love old school wrestling much more than now. Now it has become a little more baby dollish. You know, I work with a lot of beginners, unfortunately. You know, everybody that wants to do it or trying to do it or getting it. But I've been doing it now for almost 13, 14 years. And I did it full time. So it's not just going to class once a month, once a week, practicing in your backyard. I mean, for anybody out there that is listening, watch it on TV, make notes, go to school, practice, work out, get in the ring, get a partner. It's just not getting in the ring and, you know, taking an elbow. It's a lot more than that. You know, you got to make sure you're not going to lose a tooth or, you know, break a bone. It's focus. It's fun too, but old school wrestling I'm a fan of because I kind of consider myself almost old school wrestling, but I can keep up with the new thing and fads the girls do today. They try to show off with all these moves they can't even do.
Yeah, I got 100% agreement too. Half the girls today, there's not a lot of psychology there. It's don't have it. I mean, then when you see
you gotta have everything behind it too. You know, who
right.
are you? What do you do? How do you feel? But you know, no matter where you go, you get a little bit of everything. You know. I love all the people I'm meeting up in the East Coast, and I know the ones that have a true passion and the ones that are just passing by wannabes. I got to work with Macho Man Randy Savage and Spider-Man 1.
Wow.
Yeah, that was
that.
Awesome. That's a great
that.
Guy.
That's a story.
Yeah,
tell
I did. Spider-Man 1, if you remember it, if not, try to watch it. It's great. Spider-Man wants to wrestle in the cage to win his girlfriend a car or a press. So he gets in there with Macho Man Randy Savage, and he's surrounded by four Bonesaw McGraw's girls. We were the Bonettes, and we kind of beat up his victims as well. And we're all in black latex and leather, and we're mean. But he is a legend. He was awesome to work with. I was happy to work with him and happy that I had a chance to meet him, you know.
How was he to be around? Was he a professional?
What, say that again?
How was he to be around working? Was he straight professional?
Was he to work with?
Yeah, how was he? Was he straight professional to work with, or was he more of a joking kind of guy?
Seriously, and I'm not just saying this, he was awesome to work with, nice guy, great guy, polite, professional, and I remember walking around with a big container of just plain boiled chicken that he ate all day.
Wow! So who else? You did that movie. What else did you do that people would say wow to? That's phenomenal.
With wrestling, the Chance and Real Show. I did the Chance and Real Show. We had a wrestling ring in Venice Beach. If any of the viewers or listeners have remembered the Chance and Real Show on VH1, we had to teach a bunch of girls to wrestle. And if you wrestled good, you got to go on a date with the guys.
Wow.
What else? I did Knockers. Chicago Knockers is a mud team, and we went to Hawaii and did their carnivals and events and promotions with Chicago Knockers.
Wow. So, yeah, you're somebody now, that definitely gets a chance to travel a lot. You've seen a lot then. That's cool. That is
I
awesome.
Try. Yeah, because life's short. I want to do it now and get it done, sit in while I can, you know? I mean, I like Hogan. I look up to him. I wish I could have the length of his career. I mean, what is that guy? He's, like, still wrestling, right?
Who's that?
How old's Hulk Hogan?
Hulk Hogan's got to be in his, I'd say, early 60s by now. He's got to be probably 61, 62 at least. I mean, he was wrestling as the Incredible Hulk Hogan when I was a little kid with his first run when Freddie Blassie was managing him way back in the day.
Right.
And that was in the 70s, so yeah. That was before he did any of the Rocky stuff.
Right. And that's where I got Onyx from. Onyx comes from The Rock had a baby a baby pebble, and the rock's baby pebble was called Onyx.
Wow.
That's where I get my name from. I'm a rock's baby pebble.
Nice. Nice. I like the name Onyx. The void of
Thank
light
you.
Is all black. Yeah, that's a nice name. That's it. Yeah, I like that name.
Black and hard.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's one of my favorite stones. I wear Onyx, the healing stone.
I'll see you Saturday.
Yeah, I will be there Saturday. I'll be the Big Mouth wrestling manager. That'll be probably everyone will be telling to shut the hell up. That'll be me. I manage the heavyweight champion.
I don't know.
I don't know. I give people heart attacks. You ever give someone a heart attack yet? That's what I'm notorious for. You did? Okay, so we're on the same level.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe I can learn something from Onyx this Saturday.
I'm definitely going to bring my little pencil and pad because you know I'm taking names.
I am. I do reserve the right to take pictures with you, though, just so you know I bring a camera everywhere I go. So I am a
You got it.
Kind
Freddy,
of
I can't wait.
Out. Sounds awesome. Sounds awesome. I tell you, we're going right now at about an hour and a half into it. Is there anything else you want the fans to know about? Because if not, I'm going to wind this down and get ready for Saturday.
If you want more, smashbampal.com, Onyx, friend me, like me, know me or hate me, I still love you.
Sounds great to me. I appreciate you coming on and being another voice and representing ladies professional wrestling. It was an honor having you on. I look forward to meeting you Saturday, Onyx. And in Big Country, I tell you, I'm going to wind the show up on behalf of Big Country and Joey Nuggs. That's Country Wrestling Podcast. Next week's guest will be WWE's Boogeyman. He's already on. And the week after that, we've got calling in from the Philippines, ECW original Chili Willy. Now, that's his story by itself has been a wow. That's an interview I'm really, really looking forward to because he's the real deal. I mean, he was the Forrest Gump before Forrest Gump. He was the guy that ran in and saved all his buddies when he was in Desert Storm. So that was the real deal. He was the guy that snatched up and saved Paul Heyman at ringside when the security dropped the ball. I mean, he's that guy. He's the real deal guy. So he's over in the Philippines and he trains and teaches that, what is it called, Muay Thai. You probably know a lot about it being working MMA. So yeah, he's the real deal. So he's going to be calling in. I'm looking forward to that interview. And I'll tell you, I'll be there Saturday. I'm looking forward to meeting you, Onyx. Big Country,
Hi,
I know you're
so in.
Yes, it was an honor and a privilege to have you on. I know, Big Country, you're in what, Forest City this week? Hickory, where are you at this weekend?
Hickory, North Carolina for Milestone Wrestling.
Okay, so he's in Milestone. I'm in Orangeburg, South Carolina. And I'll tell you, do yourself a favor, listeners out there, support independent wrestling. It's the last bastion of real wrestling out here. I'll tell you, before the big times, there was always independent wrestling. And after all the big time folds, independent wrestling will always be at your local wrestling venues. And I'll tell you, we'll see you next week. On behalf of Big Country, we're going to say goodbye and see ya.
Bye.